Hi and welcome, I'm Tom, your host, and this is the Dropcast Movie Poster Podcast Release Edition. This format is part of the Instagram blog Drop, and you can find us under @DropMagOfficial. We do reviews, news, and interviews that all have to do with the film business. Today we will talk about the Amp Jam releases, some more exhibitions, as well as some sweet shirts. And as a headliner, I had the chance to talk to Rory Kurtz for the possible Poster of the Year candidate Parasite. So stay tuned and head over to our Instagram profile @DropMagOfficial to follow along with the art we are talking about, or check us out on YouTube for the video version. So we're going to jump right in, and the first poster I want to show you is this wonderful Batman by Juan Carlos Ruiz Burgos. Ruiz Burgos, he's been on before, and he's such a good guy. And this one is a G. Clay print for, it's the third one, or at least the second one. I have to show you the third one. The second one in the series, because he did a Wonder Woman before with Bottleneck, and this one is also released by Bottleneck. It's 21 by 36 inches, which is another size that is will be hard to frame, but we will see how that's going to turn out. And also, this is a hand-numbered edition of 150. And there was a second one I told you, which is the Superman. So you will have all three if you bought them with Bottleneck: Batman, Superman, and Wonder Woman. And yeah, this is the same size, 21 by 36 inches, G. Clay print, and also a numbered edition of 150. And Ruiz Burgos knocked it out of the park again. The details on it in the back are spectacular. I love the gold in it, especially when you look at the Superman piece. And it got the logo in there twice, got the Batman logo in there twice when you look at the Batman again. And yeah, this is an incredible piece. I really, really love Juan Burgos' style. Yeah, Ruiz, you're the man. Shout out to you, buddy. Then there's a new one for Bottleneck. They did this one here. This is by Brian Reedy. It's a lino cut with hand deckled edges. I hope I pronounced it right. Deckled edges, yeah. It's 30 by 20 inches. That's it seems like the typical lino cut size. And this is also a signed hand numbered edition of 150. And yeah, Bottleneck has basically their own Attack Peter now, and this kind of style, this lino cut style, is getting more and more popular, and I think it's very, very cool. Yeah, I wish, I think I said it last time, I wish I had done that in school, because we did some lino cut back then when I was like in eighth grade or something, but it was kind of cool. And I remember that I had a lot of fun. I did some And One piece for it, but I don't even know where that is anymore. But yeah, very cool stuff. And continuing with Bottleneck, this came out the same day, this Up piece by Matt Griffin. Matt Griffin is such a stand-up guy. We had the chance to talk to him at the Amp Jam panel, where at the big panel, I was sadly not there with the single interview, but Matt Griffin, yeah, stand-up guy. Swears a little bit, but stand-up guy. And this is a hand-numbered edition of 100, and also a screen print by with the size of 36 by 24 inches. And there's also a variant version, which is very cool. You can see it in the middle with especially the waterfall there. And yeah, this looks all very, very cool. I think it has been separated by Matt Ferguson, who does a lot of separations for Matt Griffin. And yeah, the fall variant was available 50 times only. So yeah, I hope a lot of people grab that one. It looks very beautiful and very cool. I really like this one. Yeah, and some more Bottleneck here is this beautiful piece by Pete Diamond. Yeah, he's also a stand-up guy. Sadly, didn't have a chance to talk to him as well. Was on business out of town, basically. And yeah, Pete Diamond is a very, very good guy, as I mentioned, and I hope you all watched his episode or his panel on the Amp Jam over the weekend. And if not, you can check it out at ampjam.org. It gets you right to the YouTube page, and in the playlist you will find that one. And yeah, this Watchman screen print is a hand numbered edition of 125, and it is in the size of 18 by 36. And there's also a foil variant for this one, so check this one out as well. looks also very cool and also a little bit different. So I wonder how it looks in person when you actually can take a look at that. Must be very cool. And this was a hand-numbered edition as well of only 50. So not that much to go on, but people grabbed it fast. It was sold out pretty quick. But yeah, Peter Diamond did also another one, and it's a very cool turtle piece. I really enjoy this one. It's Leo versus Shredder, and it's a 24 by 18 inch hand number edition of 125. Looks very awesome. Really enjoy that one. And there's also a foil variant for this one. So Peter did some, it's a lot of foil. And I think this probably looks pretty cool with Shredder in it, you know, with like, and the Leo's swords and stuff. And this foil variant is also only available 50 times. Yeah, and the last piece by Bottleneck I brought you today is this one here. It is I Am an Animator by Andrew Rowland. It's a G Clay print, 24 by 18. And it is Miyazaki. And yeah, I mean, you can see it in the background. All the characters and the pieces are from the Ghibli studio films. It's a hand numbered edition of 125, and there's also a variant for that in black and white. Looks really cool, and this is also G Clay print. It's but with a hand numbered edition of only 50. So I hope you like that, and I got some more for you, which is like not really Bottleneck, but it's kind of a co-release, I'd say. It looks very cool, and it's this piece. Yeah, this beautiful piece by Matt Ferguson just came out and looks definitely very, very cool and amazing. And like, how many pieces does he have now with Jaws? I think there are more. Are there more than two? I don't know. I have so many Jaws pieces, but I just love Jaws to death. It's like very, very, very cool. Especially getting all the main characters in, having the water in there, having the boat in there, having Bruce in there, and yeah, the logo up top and the colors, it looks just amazing to me. Really, really like it. Has some kind of credit block feeling, also very cool. And yeah, Matt Ferguson did it again. It's an offset lithograph print. It's a 16.5 by 23.4 inches. It's a Vice Press Editions release. That means it's an open edition, and prices are kind of cool. So go ahead and grab some. They're available international. Vice Press always doing a good job. And then they have a new guy, not a new guy in terms of posters, but there's a new guy having a poster release with Vice Press, and it's the one and only Tom Whalen. Tom Whalen made this wonderful The Thing piece. It's the second one that Vice Press came out with. We had a chance to talk to Patrick Conan for his The Thing piece, which are very cool, and especially the variant version and the regular version. And yeah, so this is the regular version. It's 24 by 36 inches. It's a screen print, and it is a hand numbered edition of 190. And then we have the variant here. This is the same size. But it's only a hand numbered edition of 120. Yeah, and Tom Whalen, very cool job. I love the Tom Whalen posters, and can't wait to have it on my wall at some point. I'm always lucky to grab one. And this is amazing. Very cool stuff. And I have a Tom Whalen Black Panther, which is very cool. I can't wait to see this one in person and how the color is going to pop, because like, it does make a difference to see a lot of prints in person, and just not just in a digital version. And yeah, it is very, very cool. And now I'm going over to the Moore Art Gallery, which is a new gallery that just opened with the MJAM on Saturday, September 5th. This was the opening weekend for them, and they had a very, very cool release. And they started out with some cool Netflix stuff. You can watch all of that in person, and also the interview with SG Poster. She was along with them, and also released a poster with them. And yeah, I'm just going to go through them quick and try to show you all the goodness that they had to offer. And this, the first one is by Adam Stothart. It's a Stranger Things print, as I just mentioned. It's called Escape, and this is a hand numbered edition of 200. It's 40 centimeters by 50 centimeters, which is 15.75 times 19.69 inches. And yeah, this I love this piece. And I heard he wrote the whole sheet here. He wrote himself on like the profile on 11, which is really awesome. And I really think that's a very much a lot of details. And I think that's also a very cool scene. So great choice on Adam's side there. And yeah, there's a couple of very cool more ones. Especially this one, because of the details in the frame here. This is not the frame that comes with it, sadly, but it's around the print, and you will have to frame the frame around the frame. And yeah, you can see a lot of details like the bike, the Rubik's cube, the tape, the hat, the walkie-talkie, I think it is, the shoes and everything. So there's a lot of cool stuff just alone in frame. And this one is called Lego My Ego by Scott Woolson, who is a very cool guy and also a good illustrator. I love his stuff. And it's the size of this one is 30 by 400, which is 11.81 inches times 15.75 inches. Yeah, some more goodness by the one and only Freya Betts. We had her on as well. She's also very cool, and I love her new office. So shout out to Freya and your new office. Glad that you have this cool kind of office in the middle of nowhere. It must be very tranquil and relaxing to draw and do your stuff there. And this is a hand number edition of 150, and it's also 30 by 40 centimeters. The next one is by Doc Inca, which has a very cool style and like looks very futuristic anime style. And like the bottom here looks also like very The Shining with the blood, and that's very cool. And Doc Inca is also known as Steve Sampson, and this one is called I'm the Monster, and it's a hand number edition of 100, and it has a dimension 30 by 40 centimeters. Very cool stuff. So head over on to Moore Art Gallery. It's definitely worth it. They have so much cool stuff. There's more to come. There's a Mark Levy piece. This Mark Levy piece is also very cool. And this is a hand numbered edition of 199. Also dimension 30 by 40. And yeah, man, all those pieces are just wonderful. The Stranger Things one. So if you're a Stranger Things fan, you definitely have to grab one of these, if not all, if possible. Our next one is by Adam Cockerton, and he picked something totally different. This has like a total vibe of The Purge in that regard, and it's for the second season. And yeah, this is a hand number edition of 200, also 30 by 40 centimeters. And yeah, cool choice of concept. There's not many people that pick that. And yeah, but by the way, you can look at all the art by or in the art book from Printed in Blood, and they did the Stranger Things art book for that, and that's where all the illustrations come from. And we have the O11, not Ocean's 11 in this case. Yeah, this is 11's is 11 in the middle of it. It got the number on it. Very minimalistic. James Hobson did that one. He's one of the co-founders of the Moore Art Gallery. And this is a hand number edition of only 50. And also dimensions are 30 by 40. And yeah, a couple of hanging. And he had some very cool pieces back when they premiered the book. I think it was in London. I'm not sure though. But yeah, he handed out, I think, 150 for him or something like that. So quite a lot, and made a lot of people happy with this one. I know Eileen has one, which her piece will come up soon as well. And yeah, this one is by Lisa Shamskaya, and this one is called I'm Still Here, and this is also a hand numbered edition of 150, 30 by 40 centimeters, including the border. It has a border, the white border on there, and yeah, this is a great piece. And Lisa Shamskaya also, her Instagram handle is Kino Maniac. And yeah, she's up and coming, in my opinion. And you have to look out for her stuff. She's a very talented and great artist. And yeah, grab it while it's still there. And yeah, the last one we have is the one from Eileen, a.k.a. Eileen Steinbach, a.k.a. SG Posters. And this beautiful piece is just incredible. I mean, look at it. it has like the very cool idea when it comes to that, and it also has this kind of feeling for the whole series. It sums it up pretty well, and I think when you look at it, you get this typical feeling for as I said, for the show. And Eileen is also the cover artist for the Stranger Things book, so that's very nice to have and to be that. And it's also a hand number edition of 200 and has a dimension of 30 by 40 centimeters. But now comes like my favorite thing from this weekend. I really enjoyed this one, and this is by Ryan Shumate. I hope I pronounced that right. And it's the Cotton Candy Dino Collection. And this one is just... it's so cool what he did there. And I love all the designs from there. And they are 30 by 40 as well. They're all hand-numbered edition of 50. Then we have the Brachiosaurus here. We have a Dilophosaurus, which is also really cool, like this one. This is the... I think this was the Mosasaurus. Didn't know that one before, but this one looks amazing. The colors are incredible. I can't wait to see them in real life. And what they came out, I think they're all screen printed, by the way. So that's kind of cool to have. Not all G-Clay prints. Or are they G-Clay? I'm not sure. James, maybe you have to correct me on that one. And yeah, of course, we have a Velociraptor. And the last one is a Styracosaurus. Also amazing stuff. Yeah, so this set is my favorite from the opening weekend from the gallery. And yeah, there's more cool stuff to come. I got a couple teases over the weekend. And yeah, people, stay tuned with those guys and subscribe to the newsletter. They do very, very cool work. And yeah, it's definitely a must have at least one or two of them from the opening. Okay, the next one is this one, Gustavo Fring. This is a very cool piece. This is from the exhibition from 1988. They have an exhibition called Idiot Box, and this is by Kyler Smith, who done also some very cool baseball cards, like for movies. And yeah, this is just titled Gustavo, and it's a lenticular print, 8 by 10 inches. This is a signed numbered edition, a limited edition of 100. And as you can see, this is the best scene for it. And like what he did there, this is just amazing. Amazing. Very cool, very cool print. I wonder how it looks in real life. So people who bought it, please let me know. It was sold out quick, I think. Or is this still available? Maybe it's still available. I'm not sure. But yeah, check it out on Gallery 1988. This is a very cool idea. Yeah, the next one is Fiona McCall, who is also a very cool artist. This is a Killing Eve print. It's an open edition, 24 by 36 inches. It's a matte finish print. And yeah, this one, the apple itself with the shine on, it looks so amazing, covered in blood, basically. And yeah, this is very cool. And definitely good cope for an open edition. And yeah, there's some more cool stuff that came out from 1988. The last one for the Idiot Box exhibition is this one by Rolston Design, who we had a chance to talk to last for our last print. It's called Hominem Sine Timore. I hope I pronounced it right as well. It's a G-Clay print, and it's 11.7 times 16.5 inches. And this is only like a numbered limited edition of 3, and it comes with a signed certificate of authenticity. And yeah, this is very cool with the kingpin basically in the back here, and Matt, like this church he is hiding out in, and like the devil of Hell's Kitchen in there. Yeah, that's a cool thing they did there, and really enjoyed this one. And the next one is also another exhibition by 1988, and they had this one. It's called is the Ashton Gallagher Mini Portrait 2. Series. And the crazy thing with all of these prints, they come with custom frames, and they're acrylic on some kind of board. I don't remember what kind of board it was, but there are so many cool prints that they come with, and even the studies are amazing. And yeah, I think it's just great what Ashton did there. And love this Hannibal one. I think Chelsea is going to be our next artist, so like an interview, so next week. And I think this one, she would love that one. Yeah, but very, very, very cool stuff. A couple are only left for to buy. And this Carol print for What the Wild Things Are is also very cool. Samuel Jackson in here, that's still available. So yeah, grab on while you still can. There's some cool stuff by the people over from 1988. Okay, moving on over to what's the name? I'm sorry, Spoke Art. Exactly, and Spoke Art came out with this Rory Kurtz print. It's a timed edition of Amelie. It's an 8x10 inch archival pigment print, and it was available for the weekend of August 38th, I think it was 31st, and this is a cool print. Rory Kurtz does this cool portrait series. There's a bunch of them, so if you're a fan of portraits, Rory is the man to go to. And yeah, he's gonna be back later, and we'll talk about his Parasite, crazy cool Parasite print, so stay tuned for that. But before we're gonna get there, I can't even talk today. The weekend was so long. I recorded this on Monday, and after the weekend of the Amp Jam, so my tongue is kind of like in knots, basically. But yeah, some Mondo stuff also for you. Two couple of cool T-shirts, and this one is the Bill and Ted Air Guitar by Matt Ryan Tobin, who's a very cool guy. We will talk to him soon, have him on the podcast as well. And yeah, this one is, phew, I love the shirt. Sadly, it's shipped only in North America and not to Europe or worldwide. That's kind of sad, but amazing shirt. Maybe I have to PB it at some point. And I just love the style. The colors are also very amazing. This kind of teal, bluish color is very cool with the frequencies and like how to hold the hands and everything. That's so amazing. And he also did this one here, the Wild Stallions, like 80s, kind of 80s, early 90s reminder here for those rock bands and how it was. It like looks very, very cool. Very cool design, Matt. Great job. And yeah, but last but not least from like Mondo, before we get to the headliner, to the big price, is this very, very cool music set. This is a The Mandalorian Season 1 8 LP box set. This is amazing. Louis Gerson, he just did the Tenet soundtrack, and that's incredible. Louis Gerson is such a talented composer, and can't wait for his next stuff. But yeah, this Mandalorian series he did is great, and now Paul Mann came out with such an incredible artwork for this amazing release. This kind of slide-in case box thing that you can put everything in there. It's like specially designed for it and specially made for it. So to get all the LPs in one under one roof, basically, and it is 180 gram vinyl, and it's as a heavyweight slipcase. As I said before, that word slipped my mind. And it's limited to 3,500 units. I don't know if it's sold out already, but I could imagine this is a great soundtrack and some great art on that. Here, I'm going to show you the for all the episodes. For 8 episodes, he did for every episode, he did a soundtrack and a design. And yeah, the first ones are amazing. It reminded me of the stuff that Dolly did for this TV show. But look at it. For all the episodes, this is amazing. The armorer in here, one of my favorite characters from the show. And then we have some more stuff here. Oh, this episode 6, The Prisoner, was amazing. Loved it when they went to Tatooine, headed to the bars, the cantina. That was very cool. And yeah, so many cool stuff. I need to rewatch it before the next season comes out on October 30th. And yeah, the last ones are also very amazing. There's some great stuff they did there. I really enjoyed that. Paul Mann, you knocked it out of the park. Try to get all of you and talk to you about the soundtrack and your artwork, but sadly didn't hear back from you, but maybe you will see this one when it comes out and you maybe hear it. So yeah, this is it for all your soundtrack needs, and I will now go over and talk to Rory Kurtz. Okay, now is the time. We're finally with our headliner. Rory Kurtz is here. Rory, how you doing, my man?
I'm doing good. Thanks for asking. How are you today?
I'm having a good day because it's going to be an exciting weekend. We will be filmed by Friday, and on the weekend there's going to be the Amp Jam. I told you about a little bit about it. So it's going to be an exciting weekend. A lot of live stuff going on, and I hope a lot of people saw that when this is going to come out on Wednesday. But I'm here today with you, and I have your great Star Wars Last Jedi piece that you have in the back there, which the people can't see right now because that's what I cut off from the screen. But yeah, I have that too.
Well, familiar with it by now, yeah. Hopefully.
A lot of people know what's up, so that's kind of cool. And you've done so many great art, and then I thought this year, yeah, well, it's almost over with the art. And then look at this. Rory comes out with the Parasite print. That blew my mind. I think for me, definitely, it's going to be in the top three, close to top one spot. I don't know yet. I thought Matt Ferguson's Empire Strikes Back was there, but then your Parasite piece came
out. That's a good one. That's another good one.
Exactly.
I like that poster a lot too.
A lot of people have seen this now, and by Wednesday we might even know the edition size for the timed version, because this is the one, the regular version that you did here. The people can see it now, and you also did this wonderful variant. I tried to score that one, but as lately, when it comes to like the crazy wanted it releases, I don't have any luck anymore with Mondo. It's, I don't know, I have to wait for a piece, I guess, but I really love,
they're tough. Yeah, those and I know that there's a lot of, you know, there can be some frustration from fellow collectors about it on those drops, but you know, like I'm a big believer in the truth that you're talking about trying to nab one of a couple hundred posters against, you know, thousands, yeah, theoretically, collectors all trying at the exact same moment to get it. So it can be a little...
It is tough. I mean, I have to say, for nothing against Mondo, love what they're doing, but I always have luck with Bottleneck for some reason. They're limited, they're sold out fast, but I had always the luck, I don't know if it's a server or whatever, but with Mondo, I lately missed out on the X-Men, the Matt Taylor House of X, Power of X one, but I got the AP, so I was lucky on that one. But I was lucky also to get his Palm Springs one. That's that one I got on the regular way. I think people slept on that and I got lucky there, but well.
Oh, and I thought that was a beautiful poster, yep, too, for a great,
yeah,
movie.
Yeah, we talked about in the previous podcast. I think it was 4 weeks or whenever it came out ago. And Matt was on the podcast, and we talked in depth about the making of his beautiful poster. And that's what I want to do with your poster. As I said, the regular version that I showed is in timed edition. So we will find out how many there are, and it has a dimension.
Yeah, it's been doing well. I know as of last night they had you know, sold over 1,000 of them.
Oh, that's great.
So it's humming along.
Yeah, I promoted a couple times already, and I went to school today, and and I talked to a couple of my colleagues and said basically, hey, did you guys watch Parasite? Huh? You always also love that. Check this really cool poster out. You might want to buy it, But it's hard to get people to buy a poster for even if it's $65 if they're not into this hobby as other people are, but you have to.
And then even for people into this hobby, and that was a conversation I had a lot with Mondo, yeah, about whether to do time versus limited edition, because even though it's an Oscar winning movie and well deserving of all the accolades it's received, it is still a smaller independent foreign language film in America. So it hasn't been seen by as many people as have seen some of the bigger franchise movies that Mondo works on, like Star Wars and Marvel films and whatnot, you know? So I didn't know, like, is a timed release really wise for something that has such a smaller viewership compared to their normal timed release franchises?
But I heard, didn't Neon demand that it be a timed release? Didn't I hear it on the pod?
Yeah, well, they didn't, you know, whether it's a demand or not, I don't know. That happens behind the scenes with the guys at Mondo. They have their request, you know, and then it's, you know, and then Mondo's really gracious too about letting me sort of make a decision to take on a project, sort of pass on one if I feel like it might not be the best choice for me at that time. They never really pressure me like, no, you've got to do this. So, but I mean, it all worked out in the end, and, you know, and I think I just was, I had a little apprehension, and Mitch over there sort of talked me out of that, like, no, it's going to be good. It's going to be solid. Yeah. And of course he was,
it's definitely very solid. I loved it, and I might try to talk more people into buying this beautiful piece of art because it should be on every wall for every movie lover. And I mean, the colors are just that great. The composition is incredible. But we will talk about that in a second. Well, how big was the edition for the variant? Do you know? Was it
325.
Exactly. And
which I think is a healthy size for a variant. Like, that's a big addition.
It is.
You know,
and definitely. And the size of both are 24x36, right?
Yeah, identical size.
Perfect. Okay. And how was it? How did you get in touch with? Like, did you come up with the idea? Did Mondo approach you? How was that for you?
Well, it started with Mondo reaching out to me. And we're sort of in constant communication. You know, they'll come to me with a couple ideas. I'll come to them with a couple ideas. And
how was it on this one?
Mitch had brought it up. Mitch Putnam, who's one of the directors there, and said that he was working with Neon, and he was like, "Have you seen this film? And would you be interested in taking this on?" And Neon's excited about the idea of you doing it, and and they want to do it as a timed release because they think it would be something that they can market and talk about on their end. And I hadn't seen the film yet, but
when
I
was
knew
that?
It was an important January,
okay.
December. Somewhere.
Okay.
Yeah. I was late to it. I'll admit it. You know, I was one of the people that wasn't turned on to it right away. I came on later. And, but I had just done Star Wars Last Jedi for them. And done Baby Yoda or the Child
Prince
or whatnot, and I had stuff in the works that I can't share yet.
Okay,
but is more of the fantasy, fantastical, larger franchise stuff.
But can I interrupt you for a second? We were talking earlier behind the scenes that you also collect. Are you going to get the life size Baby Yoda from Sideshow?
I'm going to get both. I'm going to get the one from Sideshow and the one from and then I'll make it based on the final, you know, product, you know, which I like better.
Okay. You know? Very good choice. I mean, I have the Sideshow one, and I heard the Sideshow one had the cast is the one from the set.
Well, that's what they say.
I'll take it.
We'll see what it turns out like at the other end. A lot can happen in the manufacturing process.
That's true. I mean, it should be any moment, right? I mean, I think in October it's the because I'm in the first batch, and I think it said between August and October, so it might be happening soon for me.
There are some we're way sidetracked right now, but that's fine. There are some Sideshow production photos, final production photos on the internet you can check out, and there, you know, we'll see how accurate they are. What's actually in hand that customers get, you know.
Yeah, I'm excited, and I think I have to get the baby stroller thing, have it custom made so I can have my own Baby Yoda baby stroller.
So Mondo, so I had done Baby Yoda, done the child, and I really liked getting the chance to do that, but when Mitch pitched Parasite, I felt like it was time for me to take a break from some of the bigger franchise stuff and do something, you know, a bit more culturally, you know, mature. I don't know how you want to call
that
it.
Grown-up stuff.
growing up stuff, you know. And it was, you know, it was a chance to do a few more portraits, mm-hmm. you know, and a chance to look at something moodier, with more adult themes to it. And it just felt like a nice callback to when I work on films like Drive or The Graduate, mm-hmm. you know, or Annihilation, where there's a little bit more, you know, philosophical meat on the bone.
You had you gave me this work in progress image, or this pencil sketch, and the pencil sketch already looks so damn good and so basically final. how many were there before?
The pencil sketch. Well, it started with the mock-ups, and I believe I sent you both of those as well.
Oh, sadly you didn't. I only have the pencil sketch, but it's okay.
Okay. Yeah. Well, then I'm sorry. The rest of them didn't come.
You mean the color, the color mockup? Oh, yeah, I got those. I got those. Yeah, I got those.
Yeah, those were the first pieces to come out and get approved, and then it went from that to the final pencil.
Okay. I see.
It comes before the final color renders. So the mockup, you know, I was sort of working out the position of everything, and then. And then the final pencils happen right after that.
Wow, that's...
And they're kind of the skeleton or the bones of the whole thing.
That's kind of interesting. I thought it was the other way around in that way. Why do you do basically, I'm just going to call it the almost final version of the poster and then do the pencil sketch?
How best to describe that? Let me consider that answer. The color in the piece is really important, and that's true of any of the screen print posters I do. Mm-hmm. And that's just part of the medium because it is so color focused, you know, and the number of screens you're using and how many colors you can fit into the piece and whatnot. Mm-hmm. So I can't just do a pencil sketch to figure out and discover the idea because the color is half the idea. So. Okay. I rough out something that includes both the color, you know, and the line work and the composition and whatnot. And then I need to get as close to the final image as I can in my head and on the computer screen to see that it's to see that it's got potential and to see that it's viable, you know. And then once I see that, you know, in the mock-up, I put colors in there, and sometimes I'll even mock in the textile treatments and all that. Once I see that, you know, the colors work, the composition works, the idea works, you know what? This we can submit for approval to the studio, Mondo or whatnot, you know? And if they say, we're a green light, we're good to go. Now I have to step backwards. Like you said, it seems a little, you know, anti-productive, you know, to start with a mock like that. But now I have, now I can go backwards, remove all the color from it, and work on refining the drawing and getting each piece sized and placed properly and getting the likenesses down, and then go back into the color again and restart the coloring.
When you have like the, when you look at the pencil sketch, and is that in your markup, because like when I see the pencil sketch and I just basically switched it out and there's not that much of a difference in terms of for, like the lining and like how the angles are and stuff like that. Is that that's why I still think it's like kind of like counterproductive, you know, to do the pencil sketch later. And like if you have that already in your mockup, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Here, I'm trying to find the images that I sent you here. So I can,
I only have the final pencil sketch that's what the one you gave me, and the Parasite variant mockup and the Wreck mockup. Those three you gave me.
Yeah.
And the final version in the end. I mean, the pencil sketch looks, I mean, there is not that much of a difference in terms when I lay it over, you know?
Yeah, when you lay it over the mock-up.
Yeah, exactly.
There's not, there won't be much difference, you know, as far as the angles and everything go. It's just,
but you can see the difference in the end from the final version. There's a difference.
Yeah, I mean it's certainly tighter, you know, when you get to the final version. And they're not always like this.
Yeah,
like Parasite, I was fortunate in that like the mock-up, like the concept came together really well, and the pieces flowed together really nicely. So when we were finished with the mock-up, and that took a while. It took a week or so to really figure that out and get the colors right and work out all the angles and the right portraits. Once we got to that point, you know, which is pretty far along in the process, like I was just really happy with everything. And I didn't want to mess it up and like, and, you know, overwork an idea that was already had a decent flow to it. So yeah, in this particular case, you won't see a great difference between where everything is and its size to the final pencil.
Did you pick a color theme that you wanted to go with in the beginning, or did it just came?
Yeah, no, I knew from the start that it was going to be heavy on the shadows.
Okay.
Because it's sort of a nighttime moment that happens in a dimly lit room. And I wanted to find a color that would contrast really well with that nighttime palette, but I didn't want to use like a traditional blue, like, oh, it's nighttime, so the sky's blue. I wanted something that would really pop. And I always look at the warmer colors and versions of pink and
Went for the neon for neon, huh?
I just can't help it, you know, like I'm a sucker for it. So, I thought, like, you know, getting that, so I don't know what we would call that color in the regular version against the tan and the gray, but that color outside that window, that sort of hot fuchsia.
Yeah, you know,
like it is neon.
Is it like an,
but it's not quite
infrared you know? Pink.
Infrared, yeah, you know, it's got a
something like that.
a really tech look to it. I don't know. It works.
Yeah.
And I pushed. And I mean, I know I'm sure to the naked eye, nobody else would see a difference. But I probably tested out a dozen different versions of that color, in both hue and lightness and its saturation, and trying to find like the right, you know, fuchsia for out that window that worked perfectly with the tan in the foreground. But yeah, really early on, you can see in the mock-up already.
Yeah.
The first mock-up for the right, that pink in a certain form is already there.
It is.
And it was just a matter of like nudging it a little more into the warm scale and less violet.
The final version, I think this kind of, the color pops even better against the brown. So you made the right choice.
Yeah, and I've used that prior pink before, so I didn't want to use that exact same pink.
Yeah.
So the warm pink certainly, I think, gave it a little bit more identity. And then the variant came right after.
Yeah.
As soon as we got the colors done, I started playing with those colors to find like a more traditionally Rory palette, and I just love teal. I can't get enough teal.
Yeah, I mean, so those colors pop so well.
Yeah, and there's been a lot of fervor over that variant, and I don't know if it's the change in copy from English language to Korean language, or if it's the color, because there does seem to be an affinity for those colors.
I think it's both. I mean, even on both versions, both versions are great. So I'm not mad that I didn't get the variant. So I'm totally fine with that, because the timed version is also amazing. And
the time was the first color set that came out, and was the one I felt was narratively the best for the poster. If I had felt like the variant colors were, then that would have been the regular.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like I wanted the largest number of prints to have the truest colors that I saw for this story and this poster, and that was what's in the regular.
Okay. And did you do the layer separation yourself, or is it somebody else doing that for you?
Oh no, I do all my own steps. Yeah. Well, hold on. Let me do an addendum to that. Like I do my own separations. They're not, you know, then I hand them over to Mondo, and they have a talented step artist there, John Smith, and he usually takes a look over it and sees where he can improve upon it. And I don't want to, you know, take full credit for that. He, in his own right, is a great talent.
Great.
And he's answered a lot of questions here. I'm constantly in communication with him. Hey, look at this, look at that. What do you think of this, you know, and whatnot. And he's been an invaluable resource too. So if he's not directly working on the separations afterwards, he's at least giving me advice too along the way. So, but I do, from the beginning, I've always done my own separations.
Okay. Yeah. And how long was the process from like getting the call from Mitch up to the final approval?
Well, I want to say Mitch called me in December, maybe January, somewhere around then. And then the final was just approved about 3 or 4 weeks ago before the so COVID's changed everything.
Yeah, that's true.
And this poster probably would have come out maybe 2 months earlier on my normal timetable. But because of the quarantines and the lockdowns and the general malaise of the moment, my productivity is kind of scaled back a little bit while I manage other parts of my life, you know?
How's it going to look on the AP front? You're going to have APs at some point or?
I'll have APs. Well, the timed release, I'll only have a small handful of APs, and I think I'll be selling those. I think I'll archive those for a while. I'm going to get a small handful more of the variants. I'll likely have a few of those sell myself in the weeks to follow.
Yeah.
You know, maybe once they're.
Yeah. People were asking already today because I put on Instagram, like, what should I ask Rory? And they were asking, are you going to do are you going to do remarks on them as well? That was one of the questions.
I've done remarks in the past, but I just did the whole Last Jedi release I did back in October. I did some fun remarks on those.
Yeah, I'm sad that I bought the timed edition and didn't get the remark once.
Well, and, you know, in hindsight, you know, it'd be fun to remark everything. But, you know, it's a question of time. And actually looking at this piece and the way it's laid out, I don't think I would remark this because I think that it would take away from the artwork.
Would be hard. You're right. Yeah.
With Last Jedi, there was a great spot of negative space. And the lightsaber just made perfect sense on there. Mm. But on this piece, I feel like you'd be covering some crucial element matter where you put it.
That's not much, you know? I mean, the only thing you could maybe put it is like in the top right corner from the window but I think
you'd be working light to do that because I mean the color is
exactly it would be
lighter color. And then it would be the first thing your eye would see, like what's that shape up in the corner, you know, that drawing, you know?
You're right, it wouldn't work, but it's okay. It's fine. The piece is as lovely as it is.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'll sign it.
There you go.
I never remarked.
That's always important. Signing the stuff. And since like COVID is happening, there's not much signing going on. So yeah, I think everybody is happy for a signed version.
I'm huge into signatures as a collector myself. We talked a bit about this before we got on, that I'm a collector too. And for me, like I like knowing my favorite part of buying APs, and I do a lot compared to the numbered ones, is I like the idea that it's actually passed through the artist's hand.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like that contact is important to me. Like the print that I'm putting on the wall at some point was in the hands of the artist. Yeah. You know, like it's not an original, but it's the closest you're going to get to an original, you know, signing it, in my opinion, adds a lot of value. To the print.
Yeah, speaking of Parasite here, I think, like, hold up, I need to show it to the people, but then I'm going to show it to you here. This is the Park House by Jason Edmondson for his 5x5 series. So, and it's signed, it's all good. I got it from him directly and I'm really happy about it, but the frame didn't get here yet. So otherwise it would have been on the wall, but I can't wait to have them next to each other then in the future. Since I'm doing a lot of movie reviews as well on my blog, I wanted your movie review for Parasite. So it's going to be a short one. So just a couple likes, what you didn't like maybe, and a rating in the end from 0 to 10.
Ooh, that's tough. But, you know, I had seen some of Bong Joon-ho's films prior to it. But Parasite was certainly my favorite that he's done. And I think there's a reason that it's got as much acclaim as it has and become as recognized, because it is perhaps one of his strongest, you know, films. And it shows. I thought that it's complicated. Mm-hmm. It's a complicated film. And I think that it's strength in that it doesn't make a lot of judgments. You know, like it definitely exploits and exhibits for us the class system in Korea, and I think that there are parallels to that system all over the world. I don't think that's specific to that country, you know.
And it was, you know,
and in many ways in America right now, we're seeing a bit of a class struggle.
Yeah, and it was shown very well, like in every way, from like the architecture up to like where people lived and which areas and how they behaved, and as well as your table you put there. I mean, there's a lot of scenes like having the family under it, like showing the social level, having basically the is it the Kim family?
Oh, and the metaphors of like when the floods come through in the impoverished neighborhood they live in, they're literally underwater. Yep. You know what I mean? Like that feeling of like the lower class is drowning, mm-hmm. you know, while the upper class is on a hill, you know, above the city, you know, and like, I mean, the metaphors visually were obvious throughout the whole thing.
I also loved that they had like, that they were not underground, that they had this halfway and like being basically, hey, we try to grab up and like try to get there. And I think this kind of dream and this way was beautifully shown. In the movie.
And the complicated relationships between characters, mm-hmm. like it's difficult to tell a story that's not in black and white, especially to a Western audience. Like here in America, we like our heroes strapping and barrel chested mm-hmm. and our villains twisting their mustaches, you know? And even in more mature, you know, films, we still tend to prefer a more, you know, polarized, you know, characters. In a movie like that, you know, I found sympathy with the Park family as well as the Kim family. Yes, they were wealthy. Mm-hmm. That didn't inherently make them evil. Yeah. And I think the film was saying that, like, just because, you know, mm-hmm. they were born into privilege doesn't by default mean that they're bad mm-hmm. people. You know, it's a flawed structure, but there's still grace.
Yeah.
Even in flawed structure, you know, and the feelings of the Kim family, you know, towards that wealth were also complicated. Like they valued mm-hmm. it, but they so acknowledge that they had a closeness and a function that the wealthy
did. It showed this gap, like, which is happening right now between rich people and poor people, and that this gap is widening more and more, and what it makes with, or what does it do to society and stuff like that. So that's a really interesting point of view and very much debatable, discussable.
I think it's going to be one of those films that for years to come mm-hmm. is going to grow into myth the way some literature has, like A Tale of Two Cities.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like it has a very Dickensian sense to it. You know, I think it's going to be one of those films that gets referenced a lot in the future as that growing
and
gap.
It's such a great movie. I even tried to like because I couldn't do like through COVID, but I tried to show it in my English class, even though it's not an English movie, but we're going to work with English subtitles on there, and then show that and talk about this kind of class system in society in that regard. And it's this movie fits in perfectly. But
now is it my favorite film of the last year? I can't say that, you know.
I think it was in my top three.
Feeling, I put it in the top three, you know. But my, you know, the feelings it left me with were difficult. You know, it's a film that makes a difficult impression because it's a difficult subject matter. But as far as a rating goes, as a film, I have to give it a 10 out of 10 because it is a masterpiece of filmmaking on every level.
Is.
From the performances to the story, the script,
the set, and
the
everything,
visual narrative of it—it's flawlessly achieved. So it certainly deserves every bit of accolade and awards. So
but is there something you didn't like? Is there something like some like even like we're talking like on a high level here? But is there something like minor stuff?
Yeah. No, I mean I can't say there's anything I didn't care for. You know, my feelings about the ending are complicated.
Okay.
I think that's shared with a lot of people because it was a risky ending, and I certainly don't want to say too much about spoil it for the small handful of people that haven't seen it yet. Polarizing, as good endings often are. You know, like, it's going to create a strong impression one way or the other. But, and the thing that keeps me from watching it again and again, it isn't a negative thing. It's that the film, you know, it's not a feel-good film. It's a difficult film, and it doesn't make you feel great about the state of things right now in the world. And the state they've always, I mean, the class struggle has been endless. Yeah. It's always been there. And I think it's just harder now because we have so many more tools to fight it and yet we haven't conquered it. We're still struggling with class war. You know, like we can put men on the moon and we can cure cancer, but we can't figure out a way to make financial security achievable for everyone, you know? So I mean, that, like a film like The Joker is the same way. I thought The Joker was really well written, well acted. The visuals were amazing, but difficult to watch. You know, I could watch it once. I don't know if I can go back to that.
Yeah,
well,
not
as masterful as Parasite, but still, I
watched it. I watched it a couple times, but I had my problems with it. But that's a longer conversation.
Yeah, it's a different conversation.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
Okay, but Rory, thank you so much for talking to us and showing us your beautiful print. I'm going to have a teaser on as well before that, so people can dig into it and they know what they're going to buy. So they have to buy it, the timed edition, definitely. And I hope I will have you on for a full-on interview about your career and your work, maybe in the future, and we will talk about that when we're in the off. And thank you to all the people out there watching, listening, and we will have next 2 weeks, there's going to be the next release edition. So stay tuned for that. Take care, guys. Bye.